Hello, and you're listening to Conversations on WDRT, Viroqua Community Radio. I'm your host, Tom Fassbender, and we're here today with Esther Kratzer, an activist working in and around the area of reproductive health care. Because we're dealing with reproductive health care and I'm talking a little bit about abortion, We may be covering some uncomfortable areas, so just be warned if you're sensitive to that sort of thing. Esther, thank you for joining us.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So I met you in August of 2022.
Yes.
I believe.
Yeah, that's right.
I had just moved to Vernon County, and I was at the Viroqua Farmers Market.
Yes.
And you were soliciting signatures.
That I was, yeah. Emphasis on soliciting. Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, outside Wonder State, if I recall.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. That's right. And I was impressed that, you know, you were this young woman who was out trying to, like, make change for something that had just happened. What was that petition exactly?
Yeah, so that was right after the Dobbs decision in 2022 when Roe versus Wade was overturned in the United States. And that meant that Wisconsin flipped back to a previous abortion ban from 1849. So this was a local advisory referendum, which, for those who don't know, is non-legally binding. It's essentially just a question that goes on the ballot that voters can vote yes or no on. This was an effort to get an advisory referendum on the ballot questioning sort of the morality and should we have this 1849 abortion ban in Wisconsin. So it was a team of volunteers that collected those signatures. Yeah.
And the wording was something along the lines of should we repeal the wording that would appear on the ballot would be should we repeal the newly in effect 1849 abortion ban that does not provide exceptions for cases of rape or incest.
That's right. Yeah.
What kind of, like, I mean, I think one of the things that caught my attention was, like, you were really passionate about this.
Yeah.
What kind of spurred you on? What brought this kind of, like, is this something you've always been interested in, or is this some, was there, what was the impetus for your interest in being an activist?
Yeah, I would say this is something I've always been interested in. Since I was a young kid, especially surrounding reproductive freedom and, I guess, bodily autonomy. My mother's a midwife in town, so these conversations were not maybe as taboo as they might be in some houses. So I grew up alongside her. She was always talking about these themes, and I think when Roe versus Wade was overturned in 2022, that was like the moment where I was done just kind of listening to the news and learning alongside my mom, but really the time I wanted to be proactive and be involved in these conversations and involved in the change happening. And my mom, like I said, is a healthcare provider, so I, of course, am less interested in the medical side and more interested in the legislative side.
Right.
So I like to think that we, like, balance each other out in that we can have really good, nuanced conversations about reproductive freedom, and she can comment as an amazing, trained midwife, and I can comment more from a legal side.
Very good.
Yeah.
And so how old were you when this kind of, like, struck you?
Okay, I was 16.
Okay.
Yeah.
You know, you were out there. How many weekends did you go out there and do the...
It was all summer. I don't know how many weekends are in a summer, but it was all summer at the farmer's market. Not inside the farmer's market, outside the
farmer's market.
Of course. And then most, like, major music festivals that we have in town, they sometimes, you know, close the street in front of the Driftless for the music festivals, music in the park and such. I was doing those weekends as well, and then door knocking. So
wow,
canvassing.
Door knocking too. Nice.
Yeah.
So that pretty much like May through October-ish.
Yeah,
okay.
May through October-ish.
So
it's pretty safe.
And the idea was to get it on the ballot, like,
for that April election.
Okay.
Yeah, because that election was also state Supreme Court election when Janet Protasiewicz was running.
Right.
And she was, yeah, obviously an important figure in reproductive rights. Yeah.
That worked out?
That did work out.
So you got the signatures, I assume.
Yes, we did.
How many total?
I want to say it was about 1,400. Yeah.
Wow, okay. And how many did you need?
It was less than that,
okay.
Obviously, but I want to say it was a certain fraction of the county. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Okay.
I think it was 1,307.
Wow,
is the number that's sticking out to me.
Yeah.
But
so what happened then? It didn't go as initially as smoothly as
intended. No, so we got the signatures. Again, we were hoping that this referendum would appear on the April ballot because that election also was when state Supreme Court justice currently... then Judge Janet Protasiewicz, which was running for that position on the state Supreme Court. And she campaigned much of her election on reproductive freedom as someone who could end up being that person to flip the court from red to blue to vote, you know, in favor for reproductive freedom. So it was important to have that question about reproductive freedom on the same ballot as this candidate running who supported reproductive freedom. But then there was talk that maybe this wouldn't end up on that ballot and it might get pushed off until the next election. So that was really scary there for a second, but luckily we were able, we had a big group of people from Youth Initiative show up and a lot of volunteers from the community who sat in at a county board meeting and, yeah, voiced their opinion about it.
Right. What was that like? A bit like actually participating in a county government.
Yeah, that was, I'm sure, yeah, that whole week leading up to it that we knew it was happening, I was in Youth Initiative talking to people one by one, being like, hey, if you don't exactly want to go to class, like whatever, Thursday morning, you should come with me and I'll give you a ride to the county board meeting and we'll sit in and talk to a bunch of people. And then eventually we had a good group. I want to say it was like 20, 30 people who came from Youth Initiative who all sat on the floor because there weren't enough chairs for us. Yeah, and I made it a point to talk to each person that came so that they really knew the situation and what was happening, because I just don't want anyone to feel clueless or feel out of the loop about these types of things. Like, politics shouldn't be like this big scary thing. Like, it's very tangible, and I wish that it was more tangible for young people. Yeah, but we all were sitting on the floor in the county board meeting, and then one by one, we started going up to the mic when they opened the floor, and we all started saying, like, hi, my name is Esther, I live in Viroqua, and I want this question to be on the ballot. And one by one, we all did that, and then they voted, and it worked out for us.
Nice.
Yeah.
Well, that was good. But political activism in action, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
So during the collection of signatures, especially the door knocking,
yeah.
I mean, did you ever get into any kind of tense discussions with people?
Yeah, that was... this door knocking experience was very valuable for me. It taught me definitely how to be confident in myself and to know my own politics, but also taught me how to be confident talking to adults, which I think can be really tricky for some young people and was definitely tricky for me. But yeah, there were definitely moments of tension, moments of, yelling.
Really?
yeah. Or just, yeah, or even more just, in my opinion, worse than the yelling is just an uncomfortable discussion that can happen in public, which happened frequently, I would say. Yeah.
So let's go back a minute to this 1849 law that's on the book. So, you know, when Roe versus Wade was overturned, the Dobbs decision made that, took that away.
Mm-hmm.
All the states reverted back to state laws at that point.
Yes,
And Wisconsin had an 1849 law. Like, that was like a year after Wisconsin was even a state.
Yeah, this was years before, this was, I believe, 60 years before women could vote in Wisconsin. Yeah.
Right. And it had some unusual terminology.
It did, yeah.
And it dealt with something called the quickening child.
The quickening child.
And so talk a little bit about what that is. Like, that's something that I think is a term that people knew what it was back then, but these days
it's very vague. It's not exactly.
It's strange that here's a term that exists that is a law, but nobody really can define it.
Right. Yeah. So quickening, this 1849 abortion ban, banned all abortions that happened after the quickening of an unborn child. So quickening is when the mother could feel the fetus inside of her, like in her stomach, which obviously is very vague and happens at different times for different people. So
not exactly an exact moment.
Not at all.
But so then in, I think it was 1858, there mm-hmm. were even further restrictions.
Yes, they removed the word quickening.
Right,
yeah.
So everything was...
Totally.
No ban. Right?
Yeah.
So that's... But in 1923, there was a law that... I think there was another law that was passed...
Yeah.
...that allowed up to 2 months?
Yes. I believe the state Supreme Court ruled that a two-month embryo is the language that they use, not a child, is what they ruled. So that's when this threshold was moved up to.
Now... So, but that, well, we're still sitting back at that 1849 law, or does the 1923 law
currently
come into play? Yeah.
Well, currently we're technically still at this 1849 law,
mm-hmm.
but there are a few facilities, like a few Planned Parenthoods that feel comfortable performing this procedure of abortion due to the, again, sort of tricky legal language. There are some judges in Dane County that are reading this law as talking more about feticide, which would be killing a pregnant woman, rather than abortion. So there are some places that are comfortable performing abortions.
Got it.
In Wisconsin.
It's a good sign, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so as far as like women's reproductive freedom goes, we're kind of in this dark place,
yeah.
You know, nether zone. We don't know what's going on.
Yeah, the waters are definitely murky.
There was a Women's Health Protective Act that was introduced by the House. I think it was. I think it was even passed by the House.
I believe it was. Yeah.
But you know, it's still. We don't know what's going to happen with the Senate, obviously.
Totally.
So we're in this weird place.
Yeah.
Now, something else that you did, like you, as a student of Youth Initiative High School, every year you've got to do a senior project.
Yeah.
And that's kind of this far-ranging, sweeping, year-long plus project.
Yeah.
And you, of course, chose Reproductive Freedom.
That I did, yes.
And one of the things that I liked about what you did is you didn't just kind of center on the United States. You had some opportunities to travel, and you took those opportunities to have discussions about reproductive freedom with women in other countries.
I did, yeah.
And what was that like?
Yeah, so when choosing a project, I knew I wanted to do something about reproductive freedom. I wanted to further this passion that I have. But I was feeling pretty comfortable, you know, with the legislative language in Wisconsin, and wanted to sort of expand a little bit. So I had two opportunities to travel this year. I went to South Korea and I went to Guatemala as well. And so in both of these countries, I was lucky enough to talk to healthcare providers and women as well. So I had pretty like basic questions that I then let people, you know, expand upon and take where they were interested in. Mostly this was just to explore sort of the culture around abortion and the stigma in these different countries.
And so you had to do this through, well, I mean, through an interpreter.
Yes, in South Korea, I used an interpreter. And in fact, many people in South Korea, I would talk to a little bit through this interpreter, and then they said, you know what, you just send me the questions, and I'll just write them out, and then we'll translate, which was great. And spoke to a little bit more of the, intense, like, privacy around this procedure.
Yeah, I was going to definitely ask about that. Like, that's something that, it's hard enough to talk about this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
When you speak the same language.
Totally.
Let alone when you have a language barrier.
Yeah.
And you're talking through a third party. That seems particularly challenging.
Yeah, sometimes the third party was even Google Translate. So that was, it got even weirder.
Yeah, I mean, terminology alone. And then you've also got the kind of social stigma that comes with talking about this sort of stuff. Because, in South Korea, what's the take in South Korea?
Yeah, so in South Korea, it is decriminalized, but not legal. So again, the waters are very murky. And most women that I talk to were like, I don't even really know what's up with this. But there's a long history there as well.
And what's the difference between decriminalization and legalization?
So someone would not be prosecuted for, receiving an abortion. And most people that I talked to said that they knew friends or family members or that they themselves had, had an abortion. But it felt very underground the way that they talked about it. Yeah.
So you can't necessarily just go to a doctor and you've got to kind of sneak around a little bit.
Totally.
Okay.
With more abortion medication as well.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, of course. Right. Mm-hmm. When you think of that. And so then likewise, Guatemala.
Yeah.
Less of a language barrier there.
Less of a language barrier. I do speak Spanish, but very quickly into this first conversation, I realized, I think we were talking about her experience with childbirth, and I was just like, I don't know these medical terms. We were talking about, the anatomy, and I was like, this is going to be a lot trickier than I thought. I felt pretty confident on the legal stuff, but most people, obviously, politics aren't very, a very accessible thing to learn about in any place, but in Guatemala especially, and especially for the women. Mm-hmm. So the conversation naturally strayed from politics to anatomy and to, medical stuff. So I enlisted the help of an interpreter as well here, especially for the medical terms.
And so in those cases, both countries are fairly conservative.
Yes.
Or maybe even very conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And how does that compare to the United States? Because you also talk to people here.
Yeah. Here it's definitely much more of a political issue. It's definitely in the news more. And even though it is stigmatized, I think people feel a little bit more empowered to have an opinion about it. Like, most people you talk to will have an opinion about whether or not they believe abortion should be legal. But a lot of people in South Korea and Guatemala, I mean, they're different countries, but a lot of people in South Korea especially were like, I don't really even know where to begin with this. I don't know. Yeah, I don't have a personal opinion about it. And a lot of people in Guatemala had a religious background, so that played into it as well.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Like, one of the, I think, biggest challenges to something that's so stigmatized, I mean, certainly across all these three cultures, but certainly the United States, is it's hard to approach having a conversation about this.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Well, I was able to get permission from everyone first. Like, is this okay to talk about? And everyone said yes. The questions that I asked, do you believe that women's health is a political question? So that kept it pretty broad. A lot of people in Guatemala ended up talking about the politics of childbirth and how that interacts with, you know, the family dynamic there. Mm-hmm. And a little bit about abortion, but people were very interested in talking to me about childbirth when they heard that my mom was a midwife.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so that question I appreciated because it was nice and broad and it let people take it where it was interested in. But I think that the permission was really good. I don't ever want to just like shock someone and start asking them about something, right. You know. And I sent everyone the questions ahead of time as well.
Oh, there you go. Okay.
So I could think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No shock. No. No surprises.
No. No.
Good. Very good. How do you get to a place where, like, if you're talking to somebody who's definitely got an opposing view to you?
Yeah.
And how do you bridge that gap? I mean, is there room to have a conversation there?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I believe so. Yes. Absolutely. Especially when petitioning, we were just getting enough signatures to get this question to appear on the ballot.
Right.
So often the angle I would take is, you know, we don't have to agree on this. If you sign this petition, this makes me sound so like a sleazy salesman, but if you sign this petition and it ends up on the ballot, you can vote no. You can vote like we should not repeal this abortion ban. It's just about getting this question on the ballot and it's about making sure everyone's voices can get heard. So I can respect that your opinion is different than mine, but we can work together towards this common goal. It's not always that easy. I can't always sympathize with people, but for me, the most important part is to just listen. And, you know, I've come to the place where I'm probably not going to change people's minds using statistics and facts. That's not, you know, human stories are a lot more effective than that. That's why I chose my senior project to be focused on interviewing people in different countries. But, listening to people, I would say, has been the most helpful for me, and not just fact dumping on them to try and change their mind, because that's not going to work.
Kind of see where they're coming from.
Yeah.
And so you could kind of understand.
Absolutely.
What this means to them.
Totally.
And then you can approach them on that level.
And I try and ask as many questions as possible and clarify and
Excellent.
Be very clear.
So you actually, for this project, one of the components of this project is not only do you have to do presentation and you've got to do this all this work,
mm-hmm.
you've got to do like an art piece or a physical piece, and you made these conversation cards. And what, tell me about those.
Yeah, so this was around the holidays, and me personally, and I'm sure a lot of other people, I know a lot of other people, end up in unpredicted talks about politics around the holidays with their families, and often don't really know where to go. Like, I know that I feel strongly about reproductive rights, but I'm not going to sit here arguing with my uncle about it, you know? So I wanted to use art to combat that. So I chose block printing as my medium because it has, you know, a rich history and zines and underground, you know, information passing.
Right.
And so I block printed the front of the cards with artwork, primarily of uteruses and other feminine floral arrangements. And then on the back had statistics written out about, you know, these are the facts about abortion. And if you don't want to argue like from a place of your like heart and your emotions, you can just have this card to kind of fall back on.
Right. From just read it or...
Yeah. Read it or like, I don't want to talk about this. Yeah, totally.
Just give it to somebody?
Yeah. Just have it in you. Put it in your car. Yeah. That's what I made. And then I sold those in packs, and I believe it was packs of five, and I donated the money to the Women's Health Fund in Wisconsin.
Right. And so that's one of the components of the senior project. Also is a charity component.
Yeah, a service component.
Was that the charity of
Yeah,
choice?
Technically the whole project was service thing, that would definitely qualify.
So tell me about that organization. What's going on with that?
It's a great organization. They cover financial costs, obviously, for abortion, but ones that you don't necessarily think of, things like transportation as well. They're great. And they work primarily in Wisconsin, but also outside of Wisconsin as well.
Where are they based? I mean...
I want to say they're based in Milwaukee, but I could be wrong about that.
And you're listening to Conversations on WDRT 91.9 Viroqua Community Radio. I'm Tom Fassbender, and I'm here with Esther Kratzer talking about women's reproductive freedom. So we've been going over a little bit about what's been going on in the state of Wisconsin, in the state of the world, with Roe versus Wade being mm-hmm. repealed effectively by the Dobbs decision, and what you've been doing about it. And Well, what's going on right now? I mean, this is an ongoing issue. This is something that, you know, it's not going to be solved quickly, and it's evolving actually quite rapidly.
Absolutely.
And so there's been some recent developments, I think, out of Mississippi?
Yes, and Arizona as well.
Arizona, right.
Yeah. So Arizona is the big one, I would say. Recently, their state Supreme Court, again, went back. I believe this law, I don't actually want to say exactly because I don't know when it is. 1850s, though.
Yeah, I was thinking 1845. Like, it was a long time ago.
It certainly was.
I don't think Arizona was even a state.
No, yeah. And it's really, scary how quickly these things can happen, especially, you know, when it's a state Supreme Court decision, because it feels so intangible. It's not like you can, I mean, you call your representative, but you're not calling the state Supreme Court. It feels so scary, like this big decision that was just made without you.
Yeah.
Without your consent.
So how is that different from what the situation with Wisconsin, where we've got this 1849 law on the books and they've got this 1845 law? I mean, there are some differences, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Mainly, I think there's the issue of statehood.
I believe so, yeah.
But are there any other differences?
That I'm not sure of.
Okay.
I'm not sure as much about Arizona, but I do know that the backlash has been swift, and you know, House Democrats are really not happy about it, and even some House Republicans are pretty against it because they know that abortion is a winning ticket item, you know, in this next presidential election.
Right.
And that doesn't look so great, you know, for Republican candidates.
Certainly. One of the things that I forgot to talk about earlier, when we were talking about the your participation in the Vernon County board meeting.
Yeah, to collect signatures, yeah.
After collecting signatures and to get the petition to get on the ballot, to get the question about abortion on the ballot.
Yeah.
You received a call from the Governor Tony Evers.
I did receive a call, yes.
Yeah. And what, but there's a funny story about that.
Yeah, so I knew a good friend of mine, Wade Lawler, who works at the Democratic headquarters and was just elected as local representative. Love him. He'd been talking with the Governor Evers' office, and he said, you know, they want to call you and they want to, you know, thank you for your work that you've done. And I was like, oh, that's great. But they never gave me a specific time or anything, so I was just kind of waiting.
Tony's a busy guy.
He's a busy guy, and I respect it. But I'm also a busy girl, and I was taking the SAT one fateful Wednesday morning. And so absolutely no phones in the SAT.
Yeah, they don't let you have phones there.
They definitely double, triple check that your phone isn't in the room. So my phone was powered off in my backpack in the hallway. And that's when Tony chose to call me. So I went out on the break and was looking at my voicemails. And, oh, I got this weird missed call. And then got a voicemail from Tony Evers. Yeah.
Wow. Did you keep it?
I kept it, yeah. It's still on my phone.
That's hilarious. It's good.
Yeah.
Are you gonna circle back on that? Are you gonna get meet?
I'd like to. I was in conversation again with his office about finding a time to meet with him, but we're both busy people, and I went to Guatemala, and so there was hard to find a time to meet.
So you're a senior in high school.
Mm-hmm.
You got what's next for you after high school? What do you like with regards to activism? Is this something you see yourself doing lifetime for a while? Is this like you're definitely having an impact here. You're definitely passionate about this.
Yeah.
What's you got plans?
Yeah, I mean, I'm gonna obviously continue to do this. Reproductive rights is a very important issue to me, but there are other issues that are important to me as well. Education and healthcare and, you know, gun violence and things of these sorts, environmental issues. So I'd like to study political science in college.
Mm.
And then, yes, either go on to study political science even more or into law, ideally.
Are you staying in Wisconsin for college? Or?
I don't think so.
Oh, okay.
I might venture all the way to Minnesota.
All right.
But I might go to D.C. Still up in the air. Yeah. Yeah. But I know that I'm going to continue. And I would like, obviously, to continue studying this. But perhaps more important than studying this is to stay involved, you know, to keep these conversations going and help whenever I can, wherever I can.
Certainly. Are you going to be out on the signature circuit at all this summer? Anything?
You know, it's definitely possible.
Yeah.
I might be at your door with a clipboard.
Okay, depending on what happens in the world of politics.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we talked about some of the legislation that's going on in Arizona, but there's also right now currently some legislation on the Supreme Court dealing with abortion medication.
Yes.
Access to that.
This is true.
Tell me a little bit about that, the backstory, how that came about, what the outcome's looking like.
Totally. So this was a federal Supreme Court case filed by the Hippocratic Alliance for Health, I believe is what it's called, against the FDA. And this case is alleging that the Food and Drug Administration rushed the approval process of mifepristone. Mifepristone is an abortifacient. I believe I'm saying that word right. It's a one of a two-step process, an abortion medication along with misoprostol. This approval process did look a little bit different than other ones. It was a little bit faster, but it was by no means rushed. You know, France has had this abortion medication approved for years and years before we had. Many countries did. So they were working off of, you know, proof that other countries had already had. So yes, this case is alleging that the FDA rushed this approval case or this approval process, and that, yeah, it's not a safe drug to be on the market. And these doctors, this from a, you know, conservative group of doctors and lawyers, are alleging that by this, with this medication on the market, that they would have to be treating patients that they would not necessarily have to be treating otherwise. So that it might be a waste of their time. And so they're filing this against the Supreme Court.
Got it. Interesting. How long has mifepristone been on the market?
I want to say since the early 2000s. Yeah.
Okay. So it's been a while. Mm-hmm. So it's been out there.
It has. Yeah. But the usage is going way up since the pandemic.
Of course.
You know, abortion medication was responsible for 67% of abortions in 2019, I believe, which is even before the pandemic. And it's accessible, again, to people who are living in states like Wisconsin, where there is an abortion ban, with telehealth visits. You can get it, you know, shipped to you and right. stuff like that through different companies.
So it's gone up since even 2019. It's gone up even more.
I believe so, okay. Yeah. And it's also worth noting that this medication is statistically safer than Tylenol and ibuprofen. Right. So the Supreme Court has not, it's called standings. They've not, this case does not have great standing. You know, even with the very conservative court that we have right now, it's not looking good for this case, which is fortunate in my opinion, because right. yeah, rural communities like this rely on abortion medication, you know, to get that done.
Right. So even without standing, it's important to at least pay attention to it, know what's going on.
Yeah.
And be aware that it's out there.
Totally. I mean, it's scary that this type of thing can move up. It moved up pretty quickly through these local circuit court judges and then up to the state Supreme mm-hmm. Court. Yeah.
Got it.
Through a practice called judge shopping.
Judge shopping.
Yeah.
What's the details of judge shopping?
Yeah. So this alliance that filed this case against the use of mifepristone essentially picked specifically, you know, who they wanted to hear mm-hmm. it and where to file it so that it would strategically go up to the Supreme Court, which worked, and it's there. And I believe that we will not hear the official decision until June.
Okay. Yeah, the Supreme Court seems to be kind of busy these days.
Yeah. They're booked solid, for sure. Yeah.
So let's talk about your mom for a minute. You mentioned that your mom is a midwife.
Mm-hmm.
Your mom, Jen, who I've met, very nice.
Yeah.
She's great. So this is something, this kind of reproductive freedom, reproductive rights is a topic that you've grown up with.
Yes, absolutely.
You've been around it your whole life, so, mm-hmm. so you've had this like awareness of it. Do you remember when you started being like interested in it for the first time?
Yeah.
And your mom's work?
Absolutely. So I remember, I want to say it was 2016 when the women's marches were happening. She drove to Madison and she said, you know, you're welcome to come. And I had read all about, you know, the suffragettes and things like that. And I was like a little bit confused. I was like, Mom, like we have these rights that we didn't have. I'm in school and, you know, you vote. I've went with you to vote. I'm like, why are we protesting? And I remember her explaining to me very plainly that one of the things she does in her job is that she brings babies into the world. But sometimes you don't want to be pregnant so that there are ways to deal with that. And she gave me examples. And even as, you know, a small child, I was able to see that, yeah, you know, this makes sense. This seems like a very logical, factual procedure, like, yes, this makes sense. And I remember her explaining to me using medical language and legal language, which I think was very helpful.
Mm-hmm.
So I think just, you know, leveling with me and treating me, you know, as someone who can understand these things was very helpful.
Certainly.
So yeah. I want to say that I've been interested in it since I was a little kid, but I've probably been angry about it since I was like 10 or 11.
Okay.
When she really explained it to me.
Got it.
Yeah.
But it's like the idea that like, as an individual, as a human being,
yeah.
to not have a choice about your own body
yeah.
is something that
made me very angry as yeah. a kid. You know, I'm an older sister. I blame a lot of things on being an older sister, but I want things to be very fair. Mm-hmm. I've always had this very like deep, true sense of fairness. This isn't fair. We need to figure this out until it's exactly perfect and right. So yeah, her explaining that to me, I was like, what do you mean? I might not be able to make these choices about my own body. That's very important to me, you know, and even as a little 10-year-old or so, I could like really feel it like in my gut that this was the right thing and this was something I'd be interested in.
Yeah. And what makes you think, like, what makes you take action? So it's you know, I mean, obviously there's anger here. Yeah. There's like concern for the future.
Absolutely.
But what is the thing that drives you to be like, well, I've got to do something.
Somebody's got to do something. Right. That's what I always tell myself. Well, someone's got to do something. And, you know, you're angry and you've got the energy, you know, you might as well, it might as well be you, you know, and then it's, you know, sort of the type of thing, once you start doing something, it's hard to get out of it, because I love this work so much. People, you know, expect me to do this type of thing, and I love that they expect me to do it, because
right, you've kind of become the go-to.
Yeah. Like I love talking about this. Yeah.
When there's a cause to be fought for, you're the one.
Absolutely. Yeah. Like, I'm at your door with a clipboard for sure. Yeah.
You've organized a few different events.
Yeah.
Like, certainly for Youth Initiative High School. And,
yeah.
And maybe even, you know, other mm-hmm. any students who want to participate.
I yeah.
know there was a walk in Madison.
Mm-hmm.
Was that the trans rights?
Yes, it was, yeah.
So you don't limit yourself to just abortion. You're about the human rights element mm-hmm. of, like, what goes into organizing something like that for at the high school level?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I would say it's a lot of talking, which, you know, not a problem for me. a lot of young people are passionate about these things. And, you know, I feel that I'm passionate for reproductive rights. Or, you know, I do believe that trans people should, you know, have access to medical care. But I don't really know where to go from here. So, you know, we find a lot of young people posting on social media or stuff like that, which is a great start. It's an excellent start. I will never, ever, you know, dunk on someone for just posting on social media. But I always just say, like, if you want to go further in this, like, I would love to talk to you about it. And let's make it go further. So, you know, if someone, when I was younger, was just offering to take me to all these protests, I certainly would have gone. So I want to be that person. Like, if you want to go further with your activism, I want to help you. And I want to make sure that you feel good about, you know, your knowledge and your facts before you go. So for every protest that I've organized, either here in Viroqua or I've taken a group to La Crosse, I've taken a group to Madison a few times. I've also organized like an informational, not a meeting, it's more fun than a meeting, but, you know, talking about this issue and reading the news and breaking it down, because I don't want anyone to ever feel like they don't really truly know what they're talking about and what they're passionate for before going to a protest.
Right.
It's very important. Yeah. Absolutely.
When you say more fun than a meeting, what is that?
Oh, there's like? Often a playlist happening.
Okay.
I don't know if normal meetings have playlists, but in my experience, they haven't. It's also, we make signs together, and, you know, Youth Initiative has a strong focus on the arts, so we get these beautiful cardboard Sharpie designed signs, and along with that, a lot of educated young people who are ready to go out into the world and talk about this. This is very important to me, because, you know, I've been at protests where people are like, start yelling things at me or start getting in my face, and I'm able to just kind of like root myself, ground myself, and be like, no, I do know what I'm talking about here, and if you want to talk about this, like, I'm totally confident and ready to talk to you. I just never want to bring someone to a protest and have them, you know, not experience that and then have that deter them from ever protesting again, you know.
You want to have the knowledge and education to be able to respond intelligently rather than just react and
totally
devolve into just yelling at each other.
Chaos, yeah, essentially.
Well, that's good. Good preparation.
Mm-hmm.
So you Madison a couple times, La Crosse a couple times, always mm-hmm. different topics, or always around human
it's
rights?
Been different. A lot of it has been around reproductive rights. I spoke at an event called Rally for Our Rights in La Crosse last mm-hmm. March. And then we brought a big group from Youth Initiative, and as well as some kids from Pleasant Ridge who are also interested. And then, yes, trans rights. We've done some talking about gun violence, a lot of talk about gun violence at Youth Initiative, and had a few protests in Main Street as well.
Remember seeing those?
Yeah.
You said you spoke. Were you invited to speak? Or
I was,
But who invited? How did that come about?
I have some friends at Planned Parenthood who I've worked with, who were involved with this rally. You know, it was a voter registration rally as well. It was right before that April election. So getting, you know, this topic of reproductive rights out, you know, keeping it fresh on people's minds. It was at UWL.
Okay.
So, yeah, there was other speakers as well. There were some candidates, and it was lovely.
So do you plan to have many other opportunities to speak? Is this something you're looking forward to? Is this something you like doing?
Absolutely. I love talking, and I love talking in front of a crowd, and I love talking to one person, and I love talking to myself. So any chance I get to talk about reproductive freedom, you know, talk about my experience and, you know, working towards it, talking about my experience as a young person, talking to adults about this issue, any chance I get, I look forward to.
Got yeah. it. So I assume by now you're registered to vote.
I am. Yes. Yeah. Yes. I did that on my 18th birthday.
All right. Yeah. That's good. That's good.
Yeah. I just voted in my first election as well.
And how was that fun?
It was super fun. Yeah. I was very excited to get the sticker.
Yeah. I remember voting for the first time. Totally. I voted like all the way through college too.
Yeah.
So that's something that I know my own daughter's going to be going to college.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's trying to fit that in and keep make that a priority.
Absolutely, yeah.
And register yourself to vote in a new, you know, even a
spot,
new state.
Yeah, totally.
Is somewhat daunting, especially when you don't have necessarily a fixed address.
I mean, totally. A dorm room, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've definitely become known among, you know, my high school friends, my friends who just graduated last year. I've had a bunch of people text me who graduated from Youth Initiative last year, like, hey, how do I register? I'm living in, you know, North Dakota now or whatever, Minnesota. Can you help me register? So I get on the phone. I'm like, okay, here's what we're going to do.
No, that's good.
So, yeah.
It's funny.
Totally. It was very exciting to vote for the first time, for sure.
I can imagine. Yeah. Especially after working so hard to get items on the ballot and you know, move change forward to be one that can actually make those choices.
I almost expected like a cannon of confetti or something when I walked out, but instead I got the sticker, which was perfectly fine for me.
Yeah, the sticker's fun.
Yeah. Absolutely. I wear that proudly all day. Yeah.
Very good. Very good. You're listening to Conversations on WDRT 91.9, Community Radio out of Viroqua. I'm your host, Tom Fassbender, and I'm here with Esther Kratzer, community activist and centered around reproductive rights and freedom. So, Esther, you are now politically active, as we discussed.
Yes.
You're now voting.
I am.
It's very exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And presidential election's coming up.
Yes, it is.
And
yeah.
So you're firmly in the you know, what people like to call Gen Z.
Yes.
Whether or not you subscribe to the generational labels or not, there it is.
Yeah.
So what's your take on our presidential choices? I like, you know, we've got it's looking like two old white guys.
Yes, this is true.
I remember Biden running for president in my first election when I first voted.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
In 1986.
Wow.
He dropped out. He got accused of plagiarism, I believe, and dropped out of the race.
Oh, good.
Plagiarizing a speech. And I wasn't necessarily wild about him back then.
Right,
But he's what we got. So,
yeah,
and
absolutely.
On the other side, we've got Donald J. Trump.
Mm-hmm.
So what are your... As a young person who's now able to vote, what are you thinking about?
You know, it's an exciting time to be a young person finally able to vote because there are all these different issues that are happening. And, you know, I check the news every day and there's all these different things that I'm thinking about. But at the same time, it's also not an exciting time to vote because I'm not super excited about voting for either of these people, to be honest. You know, I wish that there was a candidate that represented my views on things a little bit better. But I can firmly say that most Gen Z people, are looking for someone who's very proactive. And I don't think that can always be seen in these two people. There are certain issues. I think that the Gaza issue, reproductive freedom, these are all big ticket items that, people are really focused on going into this presidential election. There's, you know, more things to talk about than ever. And Gen Z is, you know, very politically active young group of people.
Are they? Is it like?
Yeah.
I mean, I know my daughter is also Gen Z.
Yeah.
A classmate of yours,
mm-hmm.
and she's very interested in politics.
Yeah.
So you two are not outliers in that.
No, people are voting younger and younger, and you know, like I mentioned before, a lot of people have these opinions. They just don't necessarily always have a fully formed argument. But you don't need a fully formed argument to go vote. You know, you just need to go.
Mm-hmm.
That's the most important part. So rest assured, I'll be carpooling to the polls with all my friends. Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
What are some of the, beyond the obvious, certainly reproductive freedom is a big one. What are some of the other kind of big issues that the younger generation are concerned about?
Yeah. So first and foremost, I would say Gaza, especially, among young people. A lot of people are looking for someone with a proactive stance on that. Environmental issues continue to be a very heavy subject that just sort of hang over our heads as Gen Z people, you know?
Yeah, that's a big one for you guys. I mean, it's something that you guys as a generation growing up are going to have to address.
Yeah.
Where like my generation is kind of, I mean, we've addressed it, but we've kind of ignored it.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's a scary thing to kind of have in the back of your head and, you know, we want people ready to put policies into action. I say we, I'm generalizing. I certainly do, and many of my peers do. Environmental, you know, rights, environmental protection continues to be a very prevalent issue and widely talked about among Gen Z.
Yeah. What about the war in the Ukraine? Is that something that
you I would say so as well. Yeah.
It's kind of been eclipsed in the news by the Gaza.
Absolutely. I mean, issues. Yeah, this is the thing with the 24-hour news cycle, that one crisis, you know, subsides because it has to make room for another one. You know, the news cycle spins so fast.
Yeah. It's almost like it's forgotten, but...
Absolutely, yeah. And yeah, same with reproductive rights. Everyone was talking about it when Roe was overturned and then, you know, falls by the wayside, and then something sneaky happens, like the Mifepristone case, where all of a sudden, whoa, you know, there's another threat.
Yeah, and the Arizona also brought it into the forefront.
Totally, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So what about, like, locally? Is this something that, like, I know, as part of your, as we talked about earlier, your interview process, you interviewed Tara Johnson?
I did, yeah. I was able to interview several different legislative candidates.
Right, and she was running against Derek Van Orden at that point.
Yeah.
She's since dropped out, but did Senator Van Orden talk to you at all?
He did not, no. I got in contact with several receptionists and several interns, but he declined my interview.
Declined your interview. Yeah. Well, that's unfortunate. I would have liked to have heard that.
Me too. Yeah. Someday. It'll happen.
Okay.
Yeah. I have confidence.
Okay. Keep it.
I have questions. Yeah.
Do you keep hitting his office with...
I've emailed him several times. You know, email, I found, for any candidate, really, or any person in general, me included, is not always the most, you know, effective way to get in touch with somebody. But yeah, I've been on the phone with several people who have said that.
You strike me as someone who answers your emails fairly quickly.
I do. I try to.
Yeah. I think my daughter does the same thing.
And totally.
She gets very frustrated when she will email like an adult.
Yeah. Where are you? Check your email.
It doesn't.
Totally.
You know, and I think maybe it comes a little bit from the texting culture.
Yeah, maybe.
Where like that's so immediate that you expect an answer faster.
Totally.
Where, like, I'm guilty of, like, sitting on an email if I gotta think about that answer.
Yeah, totally.
So, it's a challenge. But yeah. Generational differences.
Totally.
All right. See, bringing it back to even more local politics, I mean, we've got the state politics, but, you know, you live in Viroqua.
Yeah.
You know, Viroqua politics are pretty tame, I think, for the most part.
Yeah, I'd say so.
I'm sure some people would argue with me on that. But, like, one of our biggest avenues is Viroqua Area Folks.
On Facebook.
It's a Facebook page. Is that something you check out often? Does Gen Z even do the Facebook thing?
You know, I can't speak for all of Gen Z, but a good amount do. And, you know, I actually downloaded Facebook and, you know, made an account just for Viroqua Area Folks. My dad was always telling me, you know, you got to get on here. Like, you would love it, this unhinged political content. And, you know, all sorts of different things. So yeah, that was how I first got on Facebook. And to be honest, that's the only thing I ever check on there.
Okay.
Keeps me entertained for sure.
It's got its moments. I mean, it's got some really good stuff on there.
Yeah.
I think community support, but it can also go off the rails fairly quickly.
Absolutely.
With opinions.
Yeah.
Like, you know, City Hall coming down and.
Yeah. People have strong opinions and they don't have, you know, a barrier. They've got a captive audience via Facebook, so they can just type away.
In front of a keyboard.
Angrily typing. You know, and it's great. You know, I used Viroqua Area Folks when I was seeking women to interview about abortion rights, and I wrote a thing on there and I got some negative feedback and some personal DMs, but, you know, it's the internet.
Right.
Me and some other Gen Z people, I would say, are pretty used to that.
And how nasty were the personal DMs?
They were pretty nasty. And, you know, when last year we were also collecting signatures outside the polls on Election Day in November. And then someone took a picture and it was a newspaper article was written about it in the La Crosse Tribune. And Governor Evers, Tony Evers, reposted it on his Facebook. And so obviously Governor Evers has a much bigger Facebook platform than I do. So he had a bunch of comments.
He's in that generation too.
Yeah, totally. He had a bunch of comments and they were mostly positive, but you know, that was the first time that I was really like reading lots and lots of negative comments about me, you know, about my work and about
people who don't even know who you are.
Totally. Yeah, yeah. Writing things. And then some people found my Facebook, you know, from that, and I got some nasty DMs, but it was a little bit shocking to see a bunch of people commenting these things. But then when I reached out and was asking for people to interview, I was unfazed by those things because of that previous experience.
Right, you've heard that. It's like I've heard it all before.
Totally. Situation. Yeah. There's nothing you can say that will really phase me. Yeah.
Bring it.
I feel good about my politics. You know, I'm good.
Yeah.
If you want to email me, email me. Maybe I'll answer.
Well, maybe not. Maybe you'll just delay. Maybe you'll delay like the rest of us.
Yeah.
So we've talked a lot about what you do to affect change and what you do, like your interests in human rights.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do for fun?
Oh, that's a good question. This is fun. No, that's often when people ask me, you know, what I do. I like to talk about politics. So sometimes it's hard for me to differentiate. Like, is this fun? Is this one of my hobbies? I would say so. But at a certain point, you need to stop reading the news and be a normal teenager. So, I really like to mountain bike. I play music. I like to play instruments, and I really like to read. But it's definitely sometimes hard for me to find a boundary between, you know, I really appreciate this work that I do, and I love reading the news and staying involved. But sometimes, you know, I need to like close that door for a little bit and just put my phone down.
Yeah, I'm sure it can be exhausting and overwhelming.
Absolutely, yeah, totally.
So what kind of stuff do you like to read? What are you reading currently? I mean, obviously, you're probably reading a lot for school.
Yeah, for school this year, I've read a lot. I read Moby Dick this year.
Right, that's right. I talked about that with Matt.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Little callback to the other episode. I really appreciated reading Moby Dick.
Yeah.
I'm a dishwasher by day, political activist by night, so... When in the dish pit, I was listening to Moby Dick on my headphones and getting sprayed by water, and I felt like I was truly at sea there for a little bit.
Yeah, so, I can imagine. That's funny. It's good immersion.
I enjoyed reading Moby Dick. I'm always looking for other book suggestions, I would say. I like short stories.
Yeah.
Keep me engaged.
In and out. And then you're not too much of a commitment.
Totally.
And then you can...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Back out.
Nice.
Yeah.
So anything else besides like... Short story wise, anything you're reading currently?
Anything I'm reading currently? Let's think about this. I just read The Poisonwood Bible. I just finished it.
That's not a short story.
Not a short story. I also read this for school, but I loved it so much. And I'm reading some other books by that same author. I'm forgetting her name right now.
Barbara Kingsolver.
Right? Yes. Yeah. I'm reading one of her other books. I really appreciated her writing style. You know, it's hard when you read a book for school. Sometimes you feel like you can't enjoy it as much, but this did not feel like the case at all. I just totally dove in head first. And
right. Yeah, I've actually never read that one. I've always been put off by its length.
It's thick.
And you know, I mean, that's a personal failing, I guess.
Yeah.
Not that I'm afraid of long books, but I know it's got this kind of like mystique about it, and I wanted
totally.
To give it the right amount of space and honor it deserves.
Yeah, it's a commitment
been
for
in a
sure.
Place with that. I would have loved to have been forced to read that in high school.
Totally.
I think that would have been good for me.
We read it for our world history class, and you know, again, I liked it that it a little bit dip into the politics too, and
mm-hmm.
so
yeah.
fun to, you know, research the politics and, you know, the Congo of that time. That was very interesting to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Sure. That's such a weird. Not even weird, but like just brutal history.
Yeah,
about the
absolutely.
Congo. Like it's. I mean, let's talk about human rights. Jeez.
Totally. Yeah. Or like the
stuff.
American education system. You know, like how am I 18 and just learning about this from a fiction book?
Yeah.
You know, it's wild. Yeah.
That's true. Yeah. We definitely tend to focus on in American education, focus on like American culture things,
mm-hmm.
which makes a certain amount of sense. But like,
totally.
I do think you know. Especially once I got to college and took some world history classes.
Yeah.
Some of the stuff that I was opened up to, I was like, wow, I would have loved to have.
Totally. It can be pretty shocking to break out of your little bubble.
Yeah.
For sure. And a number of things. I've definitely felt like that a few times. Like, whoa, this has been happening this whole time,
right.
you know? Like,
right. This was 1960s? Holy cow.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's always weird.
You and my daughter are in a similar position in that you're graduating high school,
mm-hmm.
going to college.
Yeah.
The whole higher education thing has been daunting. I know as a parent, just looking at costs and filling out all the forms, it's a lot different than when I was.
Yeah, I bet, yeah.
You know, going to school. I mean, and like it's a lot more expensive.
Mm-hmm.
So you kind of, earlier in the conversation, you alluded to the fact that there were maybe three schools you were looking at going to and a couple of different majors.
Totally.
What are your considerations when you're looking for something like that?
So when applying for schools, I first decided I only wanted to apply to schools in cities because I love Rocco dearly. But with the work that I'm doing, I just want to be somewhere that's a little bit more hustling and bustling. So I only applied to schools in cities, excuse me. and applied directly to the political science programs. And the whole thing does kind of feel like a little bit of a gamble, you know, with forms and such. It's not always clear. But when deciding, I'm thinking a lot about debt. I think many people in my generation are, you know. I don't want to be in as... I want to be in as least amount of debt as possible. And I'm sure many people, Gen Z people, are as well.
And it sounds like I mean, I certainly had student loans.
Yeah, absolutely.
I paid them off. You know, it took a while.
Mm-hmm.
But like, I see a lot of people who've gone to school after me that have incurred a debt load.
Totally.
And like, the interest alone is crushing.
Yeah, it is. And it's a lot to think about it, you know, 17, 18 years old. You know, not only is it just like, pick a topic, but like, pick a topic and, you know, invest all of this future money that you haven't even made yet into it.
And you don't even know what you want to do with your life, really. I mean, I think you have a better idea than certainly I did
totally.
When I was 18.
Yeah.
But
I feel fortunate to at least have, you know, an idea of what excites me and an idea of where I want to be, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I know many people who are just like, I don't know, I'm just throwing darts at a board. And,
right. And that's a lot of money to pay on a guess.
Absolutely.
Or, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I'll figure it out later.
Totally. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that's
great. It's a scary thing, you know. I love learning and I love going to school, and I just wish that, you know, it was more accessible for more people.
Yeah.
It's so important.
How many schools did you apply to?
I think I applied to 8 in total.
Okay.
Yeah. Which took a while. I mean, the essay process and the application process obviously takes a while. Different schools require different things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've had 2 kids now go through the whole process.
Yeah.
And it's draining emotionally.
Absolutely.
And
yeah.
mentally and physically. And, you know, when I went to school, I'm like, I'm going to go here. Okay, I'm going to go. That was it.
Yeah, I definitely feel like I kept Wonder State's lights on for a few weeks there. I was going there like every day buying my little latte and writing my essays.
Right.
You know, looked at my bank account after and was like, that was maybe, you know, yes, I was caffeinated in getting the essays done, but was that really worth it? I don't know. Yeah, the essays were a lot. You know, different schools require different things, so, you know, you're having to tap into these different aspects of things that you're interested in.
It's not copy-paste.
No, absolutely not.
Everyone
they'll figure
different.
That out.
Yeah.
Totally. It's tricky, for sure. You know, I was fortunate. I was able to write a lot about my work with reproductive rights, my perspective of it, and the feedback I got from everyone reading my essays is like, you should be more personal, you know, because I've learned to talk about these things in a way that's pretty objective.
Yeah.
You know, talk about my experience petitioning, my experience speaking at events in a way that doesn't really always necessarily let my opinion show. I tend to think that, like, the work that I'm doing, like, expresses my opinion about where I stand on reproductive rights enough. But in writing these essays, I was often too objective, and people wanted to know, like, no, show more of you, which was a different perspective.
Even your paper that you did for the Project Youth and Senior Project had a little bit of your personal opinion in there, but it was very fact-based.
Yeah,
like, you know, through,
absolutely.
I mean, it's 11 pages. It's,
totally. And, you know, I love...
But it was well-written. I enjoyed reading it.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. It's a long paper. I think that facts are obviously... I think they come more naturally to me, and when I'm arguing or, you know, having a discussion with someone... that's what comes more naturally, but human stories are just as important and, in fact, often, like, more effective. And
the human narrative
totally
really speaks to
having these conversations.
So we're getting close to the end here. What, say somebody wants to get involved in activism, or someone has a cause they want to really get behind.
Yeah.
What, you know, somebody who's done this, what advice do you have for people who might want to get started?
Yeah.
Push their ideas forward.
Absolutely. I would say do your research first, and this can be, you know, the most boring, but has come to be my most dearly beloved aspect of anything, is, you know, do your research. You'll feel more confident on the ground when you know your stuff and you know your facts. Get involved in little ways whenever you can, you know, talk to people. I always recommend just keeping these conversations alive. You know, my work around reproductive freedom, you know, as the 24-hour news cycle turns faster and faster and people kind of forget about these issues, or they're not in the forefronts of their mind, you know, the more you can keep these conversations going about things that you're passionate in, you know, they're not slipping people's minds. They're alive. Conversation essentially keeps a movement alive,
right.
I would say.
Got
yeah.
it. Okay.
Continue to talk.
All right.
It's my favorite thing.
Are you interested in running for office yourself? Is that something? I know it's been something
good question.
That like people mentioned it, probably ask you a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I would love to someday. And as much as I love, you know, I love that idea. but even more, I just love the idea of talking to people and, you know, getting people's, hearing what they're passionate about, and keeping the conversation alive. So that on the ground work is really important to me, but someday I would love to run for office. Yeah.
Excellent. All right. This has been Conversations on WDRT 91.9 Community Radio out of Aruba. I'm Tom Fassbender. We've been talking to Esther Kronzer, dishwasher by day, activist by night. Esther, thanks for your time.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.